Hello and welcome to GCSE English Revision Pod, last minute pod, one day before the English Literature second paper, right?
Yeah, if you study AQA, what a gift of questions on Literature paper one.
Yeah, a lot of very happy faces.
Not so easy if you do LXL Macbeth though.
Commiserations, that was a really tough, horrible question.
But it does mean grade boundaries for LXL, I'm sure, will be lower. So
yes,
it does balance itself out.
These things do tend to balance themselves, don't they? So today we're going to move away from our typical podcast format. We're not going to take you through one question and one essay. Instead, we're just going to give you sort of tips and tricks that are very useful to remember going into your exam tomorrow, and we're also going to perhaps reference some of the other podcasts we've done that you could go back and listen to help you with that.
Yeah, so I mean, to start with, obviously, the big challenge of Literature Paper 2 is it's a bit of a stamina exercise. You've got a lot to answer.
Yes. Big questions.
Four essays in 2 hours 15 minutes.
Yes.
So my first top tip for all of you dear listeners is you have to be absolutely strict on your timings.
Yeah.
45 minutes on your modern text, whether that's an Inspector Calls, DNA, or whichever other text you study. Mm-hmm. 45 minutes on the poetry.
The anthology,
either the Power and Conflict or the Love and Relationships.
Yep.
And then 40, this is certainly for AQA, then 45 minutes to do 2 unseen essays.
Yes. And actually, I think that's one of the biggest tips. I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves a bit, but I think students often, and perhaps teachers are guilty of this too, we sort of push the unseen aspect of the exam away, and you kind of think, well, it's unseen, I'm not sure I can really revise for it. But actually, those marks available for the 2 unseen questions are...
Well, there's more marks available for Section C than there are for Section B.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're actually kind of quite easy to get, aren't they? You sort of don't have to do all that much to do quite well in that section. So certainly don't just leave the unseen section. The unseen section is really important. Loads of marks, and also marks that are not that difficult to get.
And on that note, before we kind of zoom into Section A, my first piece of advice is, you know, you need to be constantly looking at your watch. So 45 minutes should not creep up on you out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You suddenly stop like a sniper got you. You should be thinking, I'm on 35 minutes, time to start wrapping up my argument.
Yes.
I'm on 40 minutes. Okay, I need to get on to my conclusion. 43 minutes, time to do my final sentence. Bang, finish on the dot of 45 minutes. Do not steal a single minute from each section.
Agreed.
That would be my advice.
Better as well that you don't get every single thing you wanted to into the essay, but it feels like it's a finished argument that's reached a conclusion, than, as Mr. Forster was saying, that you just suddenly stop in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, when I marched for AQA a couple of years ago, I had a couple of scripts, only 2 I think, where someone had apologised to the examiner saying, sorry, I didn't get to finish this.
Aww,
I was like, don't write that.
That's
I don't
heartbreaking.
Care. I was like, instead spend that extra 30 seconds finishing what you
said. Yeah, you could have at least written a mini conclusion in that time. Bless him.
It's really sad.
Yeah, okay. So that is certainly, so timing obviously crucial. So shall we get into technique,
yes,
question by question?
Yep. So obviously, our school studies an Inspector Calls for Section A, but you might be doing Lord of the Flies, Animal Farm, Never Let Me Go. There's lots of other text choices. So the first thing, it sounds a very silly thing, is make sure you find your question on Section A.
Happens every year, doesn't it, that people answer the wrong question? Don't let that be you.
Yeah, and obviously the thing with Lit Paper 2 is, unlike Lit Paper 1, you have a choice of question on Section A.
Yes.
So the first thing you need to do when you get into the exam is find your questions on your modern text. Decide which of them you have a better argument for. So we've banged on about it for the whole podcast, but the first thing you need is a thesis. Mm. What is the writer saying about that theme? Or if it's about a character, what is the writer's trying to say about society through their depiction of that character?
Absolutely. And worth considering, I would say, when you see the 2 questions, so for our students it's an Inspector Calls, when you see the 2 questions, of course it's completely natural to gravitate towards the one that seems easier, and in a lot of ways that might be the right decision. But I would caution you, because the one that you think of as easier, is that necessarily the one that you're going to write the most interesting argument about? It might be that you've got more interesting things to say about the other question, but it'll just be a bit more challenging for you. So don't just jump on one that seems easy. Think about which of these things can I genuinely construct the most interesting argument around.
And on that note, also make sure that you're not tricked. So sometimes you'll see a key word in the question like Sheila, and you think, oh, I've done an essay on Sheila. You just rewrite what you've already written.
Yeah.
But actually there might be a slight nuance on it. It might be about how Sheila changes.
Yeah.
Or it might be about Sheila as an unlikable character. There might be a slight twist on the question that will force you to come up with a very specific argument.
Absolutely. And that's when the old favourite of underline underlining keywords in the question becomes so valuable, especially in the example that Mr. Forster's just given, when you've got not only a character, but how that character was presented. For example, I think, was it 2 years ago? How is Mrs. Burning presented as an unlikable character, was the question?
Yeah.
And then if you'd just gone in and written a standard Mrs. Burling essay and not completely explored to what extent she's unlikable, you wouldn't have done so well. You've got to hit those keywords in those questions.
So whatever text you're doing, once you've picked your question, you start with a thesis. So we always talk about an intro, and we've got many examples on our podcast for spectacles. So do go, there's 5 episodes on the spectacles. It's well worth going and listening to them if that is the text that you study.
Mm-hmm.
Start off by constructing a thesis, your overall argument. And I'd like to make Priestley at the center of this. If you are doing the spectacles, make the writer at the heart of this. What is the writer saying about this theme or this character?
That is one of the easier things about in spectacles. Sorry for people who are doing other texts, but you know, we've covered this a lot, so, and it's advice that you can transfer. When the writer has a clear message, your introduction and your conclusion become a lot easier, I think, because in for example, in Romeo and Juliet, it's not so clear why Shakespeare's doing the thing he's doing, perhaps, or it's not as clear as in a play like in Spectacles, when the didactic
everything
message
comes
is
back
so clear.
To this didactic message. So yeah. In terms of those in spectacles listeners, I would definitely go back to our episodes on responsibility.
Yeah.
Because that's the theme that comes up again and again and again in different guises.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, even character essays, often you can use some of those points. Also, our podcast on the inspector is one that, again, on the old exam board came up again and again and again. So the inspector did come in 2017, but that doesn't mean he can't come up again, because on the old spec he came up again.
Absolutely, and so many essays you would end up writing about the inspector's final speech anyway, so I think our paragraph on absolutely, things that, you know, about change and responsibility and any of those aspects, you would want the inspector's final speech, so certainly go back and listen to that episode.
Make sure you've got that AO2 on, you know, there are millions and millions and millions of Eva Smiths and John Smiths and that apocalyptic imagery of fire and blood and anguish,
absolutely,
all of that stuff.
Now make sure as well, we've talked about this in our last minute pod, think about those 3 topic sentences and then putting them together in your introduction. So say you're writing an essay about Eric, your first point was going to be something about how at the beginning of the play he's presented as quite an immature character, but one who still challenges his father in quite interesting ways. Then you wanted to talk about how his actions towards Eva Smith were terrible, perhaps unforgivable actions, and finally you wanted to talk about them, his changing nature towards the end of the play. Then your thesis might explore something like, though Priestley presents Eric as an incredibly immature character and one who commits terrible actions, Priestley also seems to suggest that he, unlike some of the others, has the capacity to change. Straight away, you've shaped your argument, right? The examiner knows where you're going, and you've done a lot of the work in the first sort of 5-10 minutes.
And then if you think, what does he represent about society? He represents people that no matter what you've done, there's always the potential within you to change.
So,
On that note as well, please don't try to second guess the examiners and only revise things that haven't yet come up.
Yeah.
So the poetry, I mean, we'll come on to that in a moment, but the poetry last year question was the same as the sample paper.
Yeah.
So actually the exam board can repeat stuff.
That was cheeky,
it was
wasn't
very
it?
Cheeky.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah, it's nice to keep
it. Like, little cheeky trick there.
Yeah, you don't want to be able to guess.
Keep
you want to know everything, students.
So whatever text you're doing tonight, main characters, main themes, go over them, think about the main arguments, but above all, make sure you have your AO2 prepared and you've thought a lot about the writer's message.
Absolutely, yes. So, question number 2.
Yeah, so section
poetry.
B. So let's not call it question 2, because there are a lot of questions on this paper.
Sorry, I did
Let's
apologize.
Call it
section
B. B, which is technically actually question 25 or question 26.
Okay, if we knew how to edit, I could actually go back and change that, but we don't, so we're
totally
just going to have to... Power
technologically
on.
Illiterate.
Yeah.
So whether or not you do power and conflict or love and relationships, it is important you know all 15 poems. And it's important you have quotations from all 15.
Yes.
Of course, one will be printed in front of you, the other one will be from your head.
And of course we have, is it 9 episodes we've done on power and conflict where we cover all 15 of the poems in one way or another. They are all there on this podcast channel for you. Word of caution, we have done a likely question with each poem. What we have not done is the only possible question with each poem.
Yeah, so the most important thing is that for all 15 poems, you've thought through what kind of questions could you be asked
Yeah.
About each poem. So remember, Ozymandias is not just about power. There are other things going on in the poem about the power of nature, or about
pride,
pride, or about time.
Yeah.
So there's little nuances. So what I like to do is, for each poem, I like to have a flashcard on that. I have my AO2, and I also have around. I also have, you know, the different themes at the top that it might embody.
Yeah, I think Storm on the Island's a great example of that, because it could be used in a question about nature, but equally it could be used in a question about human power.
Yeah, and politics.
And then you'd write about it in a completely different way. Yeah.
And on that note, I think another thing, people just think about remembering quotations, but equally as important is remembering your analysis and also your high-level vocabulary. So on every handout from all of our previous podcasts, we have a list of vocabulary that will help you up-level your analysis. Please go and look over some of that vocab tonight.
Yes.
It can really improve your answer. Because as soon as you're talking about, you know, the ambivalence towards society in London, or you know, straight away you're presenting a more precise argument.
Yeah, absolutely. And you will get that. And the more you do that, and the more you look for links. See, this is the thing with both poetry and characters and themes, in, as we were talking about a minute ago. The best revision will be when you start seeing all of the connections. You don't want to be analysing 15 different poems in isolation. You want to be analysing the connections and the similarities between those poems. Exactly the same as when you're doing Inspector Calls, you're not revising characters in isolation, you're not revising themes in isolation, you are revising how all of these things intersect and connect with each other.
So, quick top tips for section B. You've got, again, so we're 45 minutes into the exam now. You turn over to question 25 or 26, depending on whether you're doing love and relationships or power and conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There's no choice of questions, so you quickly look at the poem. And you look at the focus of the question.
Yeah.
And you decide very quickly. There's helpfully listed above you which poems you've studied.
Yeah.
Go through and think, not which poem do you know the best, but which poem connects the best. It'd be better actually to have a poem you knew less AO2 about, but you had really sophisticated arguments.
Yes.
Because actually, in terms of, you know, remember, the top level, level 6, talks about having a conceptualised argument, which means you've got throughout your essay a really sharp sense of exactly how are these poems different, how are they similar, what are they saying about society, and whatever the theme of the question is.
One more thing to give you very quickly before we move on, because I know Mr. Forster's got loads of work to do today, is that a great way to start with those poems is, in your topic sentence, start with something that links them, but then say what the differences are. Don't just say that this poem does this and this poem does this completely different thing. Say, while both poems do this, they explore it in these different ways, or something along those lines.
Yeah. The worst comparisons are the ones where they say, whilst apples are a fruit, on the other hand, I like Manchester United.
It's
not a comparison, is it?
It's a good comparison.
So what you've got to actually make sure is that you're comparing or contrasting something that can be compared or contrasted.
I mean, I love one of those things.
What I would advise you to do tonight is go back over our 9 podcasts on power and conflict, use them to help you model what you're doing.
Yes, very much so. Section C.
I would argue this is the most important section of the exam, because a large proportion of candidates will not finish it.
Yeah.
There are 2 essays to do in Section C. I would spend half an hour on question 27.1 and 15 minutes on question 27.2.
Now, the nice part about this is, and I don't want to jinx tomorrow, but typically they don't give you a poem that's that hard. They give you a poem with a clear, easy-to-understand theme running through it.
And do go and listen to our podcasts on the Unseens. We've done 3 of them. They are the ones with the fewest listens to on our website. So what I would say, actually...
That's very hurtful.
This is an example, though, of people overlooking 32 easy marks.
Exactly, that other people aren't going to get.
Because
you know,
in those episodes, we've told you that however hard the question is, however hard the poem is, the question tells you what it's about.
Yeah.
The question will say, to a daughter leaving home, how does the poet present the speaker's feelings about her daughter? We know the poem's about her daughter.
Feelings.
And feelings. If in doubt, go, is it positive or negative? Have a guess if you don't understand
start
it.
Start off easy. Sorry.
Yeah, and then all you've got to do, Hitley, is engage at a sensitive level with why has the poet used the words they use, the metaphors, the similes, the imagery? Why have they structured it as they have? And you don't have to write about structure, but here's the thing that I would say. I would say to my students, if you're not sure, you know what the effect is, because it's about the speaker's feelings about their daughter, if that's the question.
Yeah.
It's about loss. So find something and explain what it shows about.
How has the poet created that feeling? Whatever it is that you've identified, fine. How has the poet done that?
Yeah. So look at the connotations of words, look at motifs, look at imagery, look at metaphors, look at similes. And the truth is, there are wrong answers. but there are more than one right answer.
Absolutely.
So don't worry about if you've hit exactly what you think the poet intended. Mm. Just work out, can I justify my argument by what I've just read?
Yeah.
So don't forget with 27.2, you then have to do that 8 marker comparing two unseen poems.
Now again, 8 of the easiest marks in the entire
Let's remember, syllabus. There's only one assessment objective on this question, that's AO2. So you just have to compare the two poems and pick out a metaphor, a simile, or some kind of language feature that you can analyse and say, why is the writer in poem? So the obvious one to look for is imagery. Metaphors or similes. How is imagery used in poem one? How is it used in poem two? How is it different? How is it similar? How are they both engaging with the theme of the question in different ways?
Poem one personifies the weather as a kind of dangerous enemy, whereas poem two describes the weather using imagery suggesting gold and beauty.
Bang.
Bang.
A few quotations.
8 marks.
Analyze
Thank
them.
You.
Yeah. And I... the story I always tell my students, they'll be bored of this, just to finish on. I had a student a couple of years ago who had he managed his time really badly. He had 5 minutes to write that 27.2. He wrote 2 sentences on it, two long, complex sentences, one on each poem, comparing them, and he managed to pick up 5 out of 8.
Yeah.
And that 5 out of 8 was the difference for him between a grade 9 and a grade 8.
Did he get the 9?
He got the 9 by about 1 mark. So my advice would be, however, you know, never give up on this exam, even if you've only, I mean, that would be a terrible timing, so leave yourself 5 minutes for 27.2, and I don't want that to happen, but even if you look at the clock and think, I've got 5 minutes left, what you think is, not what I can't do, think, what can I do?
What can you do?
I can make a quick analysis of poem one, a quick bit of analysis from poem two, I can compare them, and I can finish.
Good. And don't write a little sorry message for the examiner
saying it's
unnecessary. All right, guys, best of luck. We will be thinking of you. We will be rooting for you. Please let us... We loved receiving all your tweets and emails when you came out of the last exam.
Such a nice email.
Yeah.
From an individual called...
Maybe not full name.
Maybe not full name. And his dress. No. But there was we had some really nice
We had some
messages.
Really lovely emails. Anyway.
And as one person pointed out, we had done a podcast on the exact Jekyll and Hyde question that came up pretty much.
Yes.
So you never know. You might get lucky.
You never know. And please let us know how you got on and all that kind of stuff. And yes, once again, best of luck.